then the process starts all over again by strengthening and reinforcing their self-importance under a new banner, appointed by God to carry out the mission, the preachers, the gurus, the self-appointed masters. They go out into the world, perhaps build a network of supporters around them, pronouncing their chosen status, build an organization or cult, when in reality all they build is a new, grander illusion of self-importance, which frequently ends in disappointment, animosity and hardships. In reality we are all chosen ones, linked to our source, but because we all are, it doesn't make us anything special. On the other hand, I often applaud people who give authentic testimony of their inner, often very personal, experience, and thereby enhance our greater understanding of consciousness, strengthen our general awareness and encourage people to reconsider their own paradigms, mainly that we are more than a physical body. For the experiencer personally, the best they can do in order to nurture their connection to the source energy is to remain humble and open, and if they feel inclined to make the world a better place, to do so with humility, naturally attracting support by the strength of their actions rather than inventing a new persona and promoting a new belief. Most people's psychological entrenchment will often break down as a result of trauma, some kind of shock where they can no longer control a situation, no matter how powerful their ego or self-image. This point is often reached during a life crisis, such as a death, a breakup with a partner or bankruptcy and so on, though more often than not people carry out a heroic repair job to take things back to the condition it was before their crisis, rather than letting go of the old paradigm, questioning who they are and starting to think outside of the box in order to make a fresh start. This precipitates letting go of the former self. This act of bravery is exactly the attitude needed to enter much higher states of consciousness. Blessings are not always received in the form of ecstasy brought about by intense religious devotion, but often simply by surrendering our self-importance during a crisis, which can have a powerful transformative effect. We may need several of these humbling or letting go experiences in order to appreciate the finer aspects of our being, which are often found in stillness beyond the turmoil of our thinking and accessed by a feeling radiating from the heart. The heart finds it easy to let go of thought, and what else are our self-concepts and ideas of self other than thoughts? The other pathway to send our adherings of self-identification on their way and appreciate the actual ocean they have been swimming in is by regular meditation, where we gradually and more or less trauma-free acclimatize ourselves to the process of letting go. Meditation is nothing other than that, letting go. Our Western mindset makes letting go very hard, because our main focus is on holding on, of being more and getting more. The closest we have come to accepting this is by calling meditation relaxation, but this is clearly not enough. It is more like surrendering to the heart or the breath than hanging on to our thoughts, which are accustomed to clinging on to the old concepts and rigid structures. By a continuous practice of letting go, these rigid structures will be broken down and the rewards of tranquility will start to materialize. We will then begin to realize that our brains can be trained and controlled like a dog and our habits surrendered. If we consider meditation as a continuous stream of letting go, we don't exclude anything in the letting go process until we become a blank canvas, an empty vessel naturally filled by what our authentic nature had in store for us all along. We are in a psychologically much better position to realize a state of natural transcendence, which had been obscured by our fixations and attachments to specific issues. Letting go will create the kind of mental space into which the higher aspects of our consciousness will seep, or even burst through and translocate our awareness, stripped of its former identification, into completely new territories. If it happens during a sudden shift, the feeling often is that there is a completely new us, one we've never seen before but which feels strangely familiar. This new us is exponentially more powerful, more perceptive and cognizant. It employs completely new modes of perception and cognition. It operates in a field of unlimited freedom, unhampered by any former self-limitations. This is the mindset that opens the gates to our true home. When this happens, we experience what is known as an awakening. From that moment on, we no longer feel separated from our source and are in constant communication and exchange. In the early stages, we may feel we've lost the connection at times, though deep down we know where we belong. We are no longer who we thought we were, and although nobody else may notice it, we secretly foster our new awareness until it finally clicks into place and it becomes our new and permanent resting place, from where we conduct our daily affairs from a completely new perspective, guided by intuitive wisdom and refined perception. In other words, we are beginning to explore our full potential, which begins to harness our chief characteristics, natural talents and abilities in new and more efficient and fulfilling ways. This is the state in which we are open enough to allow the energy of our singular consciousness to vitalize our awareness in its own home ground and receive its blessing. Its transformative effect is experienced as ecstasy. Once we enter into the home ground of singular consciousness, ecstasy, joy and fulfillment are the dominant attributes in which we conduct our new life. This is the psychological position the mind has to be in order for us to enter the higher realms and non-physical reality systems of consciousness during OBS or deep meditation. These are the sublime regions of the higher consciousness, the unexplored universe, the unlimited frontiers of the evolved human. It is here that we unlock all the great mysteries of who we are and what lies at the root of all existence. We are entering the realm of the cosmic traveler, who transcends space and time and samples the vistas of our infinity. I chronicle this process first during an out-of-body experience in multi-dimensional man and later related how it was experienced via meditation in my book The 10-Minute Moment. In both cases, I documented how these states required the initiative of singularity and were outside and beyond my own individual power. We may be meditating until the cows come home, but we cannot will ourselves into the position, because the thing that wills is the very thing that needs to be surrendered. Singularity decides when we are ready to receive it, and it does so by administering an intense experience of ecstasy and rapturous blessing. All we are then able to do is completely surrender and relinquish any trace of our old mocked-up or inauthentic persona. Sometimes we enter this state where nothing is happening, nothing at all, except a deep sense of serenity and peace, which we feel happy to remain in for hours. When this takes place, we have entered a state of samadhi, where all the subtle inner transformations run their course without us actually knowing. At other times, the change in consciousness this entails can be very dramatic, but should not be seen as a measure of its successfulness, though they often make for a better narrative. The following are my actual diary entries of what this state of consciousness entails. I have tried my best to communicate the experience as graphically and as accurately as I possibly can. As can be seen by the different descriptions, each experience is totally unique. There are no precedents and there are no repeats. Nature responds in a totally dynamic way to the way we individually are in the present here and now situation, and for this very reason each experience will be a one-off and unique. In my previous book, I referred to these states of sublime consciousness and their accompanying environments as the superdimension, mainly because it exceeded everything experienced before and ushered in a completely different state of consciousness. That particular entry was based on a powerful experience I had as far back as 35 years ago. Since then, many things have happened, and although the account I produced was authentic and in keeping with my experience, I have since then had far deeper insights as well as experiencing a profound permanent transformation. Each time this process takes place, it is also a reminder that we have not arrived at an end point, but always at a new starting point as the greater vistas of our infinity open up before us. I can no longer look at these states in terms of super or superior, because it is a state of consciousness that has no equivalent in any of the reports that have been written so far. I mentioned earlier that on the higher dimensions or astral planes we find many people who, by their state of realization, should be residents of the real heaven territories, which I am about to expand on, but they have chosen an astral body to be on constant standby to help in the lower regions. Here their energy radiates widely and enhances their surroundings. They bring a light to bear which makes them appear like gods. It is here that much of the healing is administered, and the people whose lives are in the balance because of their near-death experience will readily find help and be supported by them, as well as receiving teaching and wisdom from these exalted entities. They may even be shown things by means of their extraordinary powers that will make them appear godlike. These evolved people residing on the sublime astral energy levels are, without exception, exquisitely beautiful and attractive, because there is no longer any negativity present at all. They also draw their powers directly from the much higher dimension and make up whole communities and councils. Their wisdom shines through in anything they do. No wonder visitors from Earth imagine them to be the avatars of their faith and religions, and even God in human form. It is not for me to question the validity of reports submitted by experiencers, and it would serve little purpose, because all that matters is the learning and the benefit derived from such experiences, which are often life-changing and transformative. Having been exposed to a lifetime of drudgery and the challenges of physical existence, on entering such a refined region for the first time, it is almost impossible to find other words than heaven, angels and God in describing the enormous benefits received. Yet it is only when we break through the astral barriers that we will become fully cognizant that what we experienced before was only the forecourt to the real thing, which is truly of a magnitude and expanse in consciousness that is humbling when we first encounter this state. The relatively little I have seen and witnessed is less than a pinprick on an elephant the size of our sun, and I can make no claims at all that I know more than the most rudimentary information laid out before me. There have been some reports in the past by the Theosophists with regard to the Devachanic planes, but even they skirted superficially across this enormous subject. How can you possibly report about the universe when you have only set foot on a few square meters of the moon's surface? This is the challenge we are faced with. We are confronted with multiple dimensions a millionfold more complex and grand than our physical dimension. At the same time, each person visiting it will also have to contend with the universe of their own making as a reflection of who they are, their own angle and custom-made heavens, and this in itself may reveal itself to be infinite. No wonder the mystics who sailed through these regions referred to them as distractions, when their only aim was to enter the heart of God. Indeed it is. I have been seduced into it myself by their sheer extravagance and the multitude of visual and sensory challenges, only to find myself getting lost like in an infinite labyrinth where the only way to find my way out of it was by clinging onto the tentacles of love and light attached to any object we find here. Where my words utterly failed, I have tried my best to create sketches and impressions with the insufficient tools of my trade and digital media, and in that, too, I have failed. Having been immersed in these incredible scenarios, it is simply impossible to reproduce them adequately using conventional means, because what we find encompasses multiple aspects such as vision, sound, motion, color, shape and powerful cognitive attributes of feeling and realization, which cannot be reproduced in any media known to us. When I refer to vision, sounds and motion, I refer to these in their superlative aspect that can never be experienced via our physical perception. Our new perceptions are enhanced by a power of 10 or more. Nevertheless, these exalted states found mentioned in esoteric and religious literature are universally described as states where there can reside no evil, realms of continuous bliss, joy and fulfillment. There is nothing on earth, within our language or our knowledge, which could adequately describe what it is like, and yet we find that our art and architecture have been heavily influenced by the visions of the few. I found in particular that Islamic art, with some of its magnificent mosques, has received inspiration from here, building the designs on primary geometric shapes like the hexagon and the rich repeating pattern. At the basis of creation are basic mathematical and geometric shapes, which build everything via increasingly complex fractal geometry in an instant. The fractal geometry is almost always to be seen, and everything is constructed with it, although it may not appear obvious on the surface. Simply looking at plant growth, life forms, the coats of animals, shells, flowers, rivers, stars and galaxies, we find that the fractal geometry is even here on the physical level at the basis of everything nature designs. Fractals are such a powerful aspect of creation that it is now extensively used in computer simulations, and new computer games are designed around them to simulate a whole ever-changing universe and infinite gaming territories. When I have had excursions into these strata, I inevitably found these to be the building blocks of many things I encountered. Here is a short snippet from an undated journal entry of one such an observation. Of the little I have observed, it is the geometry and the symmetry of the higher regions which struck me the most. Even now I am left with the magnificent view and territories still lingering prominently in my memory because of the powerful visual impact they had on me. In one, I was walking along a path suspended in the air, but which was intermittently connected, every 10 or 20 meters or so, via sublime ropes, to the walls of a tunnel which was porous with large openings like perforated cell walls, and I could see through the gaps into the environment these tunnels were suspended in. Beneath my walkway, I found streams of colored light flowing underfoot like a raging river. Everything of every aspect of the designs followed a certain pattern from which everything evolved into new shapes, yet underneath it all it carried a common signature or characteristic design. My path meandered into the distance, which was obscured by invigorating mists of light that showered sparks of blessings over me as I walked through it, and even these mists were connected to the rest of the scenery in some mysterious ways. I was keenly aware that what I saw and touched was also an intimate part of who I was, and yet at the same time I could never be quite sure what I would find around the next corner as the world kept shifting and changing, but one thing I could be sure of, nothing ever deviated from an intrinsic plan or pattern. Even the symphonies of sound, which I had never heard before, were only responding to the harmonies of their fractal manifestation or perhaps even generating it. This was nature working on its highest and most sublime level, following a cosmic order and principle that was at the root of all the magic I was to witness, and yet, at the same time, it was myself and my unique position which enabled its unique manifestation. It was easy to be carried along and enjoy the unfolding plans and symphonies, but it is just as easy to shift my intent and enter a completely different environment altogether, of which there could be billions, all different. Just by an act of focus and intent I could find a completely unique and new aspect of manifestation unfolding according to the same principles of divine mathematics arranged around my unique position. But as I said, this is just a snippet. There are many and they can change in an instant and reveal a completely new and unexpected environment, which makes you wonder how such incredible diversity, complexity and beauty can be achieved in almost no time at all. There are earthly scenes as well, pastoral landscapes with villages and towns just like on Earth, but simply on a glorified, bliss-inducing level, but even these follow a pattern based on harmonics. It seems that in this world everything is perfect and our imperfection only arises out of the chaos produced when the primal energy flow is disrupted on the lower planes by choking it off with negative sentiments. Here, however, the permutations of any landscape we regard on Earth as sublime will be found in this infinite space, but in sublime perfection, enhanced by a mind that has broken out of its confinements. Every aspect found on Earth, such as power and force, we will find here, but without any corrupting aspects and only in its purest state. Without any chance of tiring of such perfection, we will find that the blissful glory of its roots will assure that everything we feast our eyes and senses on will create an experience of utter fulfillment and blissful enjoyment. Date missing, the gates of higher consciousness. The whole experience lasted probably less than a few intensive minutes. I had been somewhat prepared to make Saturday a day of probing deeper into the higher states of consciousness by becoming aware first of its intrinsic stillness. I had used intent the night before and meditated for an hour at 6 in the morning. After I dropped Julia off at her course at 10 o'clock a.m., I used the household chores I had to do for the day as a means for intense meditation. This meant connecting with the present and experiencing every action and every moment with full awareness. It soon put me into a very connected state, a feeling where I feel intensely at home and at a deep peace with myself. Gradually the division between myself and my tasks became more fluid and I began to notice that my consciousness was no longer just residing within the confines of my body. I then went into the lounge and practiced Qigong for 15 minutes. Afterwards I retired into the meditation room, where I meditated for about an hour. I was on the verge of dropping into a sleep-like trance, but something jerked me into full waking awareness, though it was not physical consciousness. I observed passively new vistas passing in front of my vision. Incredibly complex patterns created an astonishing array of arches through which I began to travel. The scenes I passed through were continuously evolving and, at every moment and every turn, I found staggeringly new forms and manifestations which simply came from another world. I traveled through tunnels made out of complex fractals, patterns which revealed themselves to be the most natural way of consciousness manifesting its creation. With their deceptive complexity, yet utter simplicity of unfolding, they allowed for infinite varieties of manifestations. As they evolved, not only did they reveal new detail, but also conjured up incredible powers in order to create vast and staggeringly beautiful monuments, which grew and unfolded in breathtaking glory and diversity. For a moment, I pondered what it would be like to get lost in these magical labyrinths, so beautiful and so fantastic in their ever-changing promise of adventure that it would be close to impossible to ever find your way out again. I then saw that the visual vistas that spun out in front of me, however glorious and rich and however magnificent their beauty, were little more than a trap for the senses and attention to keep me away from the place where I truly belonged. Instantly I recalled the stillness, the silent companion who had been waiting patiently for me to remember. What I had seen was little more than a movie screen. As I resisted the labyrinth of form, I was rewarded with a powerful wave of love rolling towards me. I began feeling pressure on my forehead and calmly reasoned that it was energy rising and settling into a cold, burning fire. I was ignited and instantly surrendered to the wave of love. The image in front of me began to change. Where I had witnessed the turbulence of ever-evolving thought forms, there was now laid out in front of me the most heavenly garden. Whereas before I had been a detached observer, this time I was personally invited into enchanted grand parks, elaborately designed with paisley curls of flower beds, promising the joyful wonders yet to unfold. I was taken, mind, body and soul, towards an elaborate gate, shrouded in glowing mists, fashioned from gold, orange and amber stones and metals. It was pinned into a glorious golden sky that had no horizon. Here I was, standing in front of the most sublime archetype, so often reported by people who had crossed the borderlands of death, Heaven's Gate, a cliched symbol, and yet in anything I had ever seen before in my life, this was more and promised to be another pinnacle. I could spend a fair amount of words in an attempt to do justice to its glory and magnificence, but the core significance of this great symbol was the realization that I was just about to enter my true home, the place where I was born and where I had sprung from. That it was time to depart from a world defined by opposites and separation and become reunited with a long-lost love in sacred ecstasy. I abandoned all thought, just as a pilgrim might abandon his belongings and his shoes in order to enter a holy shrine. I was there in my entirety as the gate opened and I entered on a wave of joy, which swiftly became my driving force. It did not last. My guide had not reached me, nor was I ready. Thoughts which I deemed long abandoned clasped themselves around my heels and abandoned my joys. I was pulled back into the labyrinth of time, where one event followed another. The space around me began to fade and turned into a vision only, and then I sat back in my chair. But this was okay. I noticed that I had not been divorced at all from the reality of my essence, only from another form of presentation, and where I was sitting now was glorious reality too, in all its boundless peace. My mind detached from thought, I was still and free. I had moved into the place of my free choosing where I could partake in the offerings of my innermost secrets too. For an hour I rested in my chair, contemplating the big questions of existence and the mechanics of thought, how they were made and what they were made of. At these shores of time, I watched effortlessly their waves, their interaction, their mounting crests, the joyous delivery of treasures they brought ashore from the ocean's depth, and every wave delivered new wealth. There is much more to a short experience such as this that is hard to put into a narrative format with the cognitive aspect with the insights and knowledge gained from such an experience. We have to bear in mind that consciousness is vastly expanded in such moments and encompasses a non-linear awareness, which is hard to describe once confined again to the prison walls of our brains. When scientists and philosophers grapple with intellectual problems, they mostly do so by employing linear thinking. One thought follows the next one, ideas are lined up like beads on a necklace, pitted against each other, logical conclusions follow into openings of new pathways for further thinking. All the while the neural network of the brain is working overtime, streamlining the grooves, becoming more efficient, faster, more productive. Occasionally whole areas light up, resulting in spontaneous epiphanies. This is not how the non-physical cognitive apparatus works. Here everything happens in non-linear ways, at once, via knowing rather than thinking. There is no time delay, just a connection performed spontaneously, programmed by the tapestry of the inner person. That doesn't make us into nuclear physicists, because it very much relies on what we are under our individual program, but within the program we have spontaneous access to all information relevant to us. So, for example, we can follow a line that connects us to a former life and this life will be accessed at once and in full high definition. We are still individuals and a higher status does not change this. These heavenly vistas are also very populous with such individuals, just as our world is here. We are like bees clinging to the honeycomb, congregating in cities and communities just as we do on every lower level of physical and non-physical reality. Whereas on Earth we socialize and interact mainly for survival, on these higher levels we interact motivated by aesthetics, interests and cognition. Our cities revolve around thoughts, ideas, our fascinations and the arts. Here is a short report. The 7th of May 2012, Life Experience Eders, a tapestry when I am fortunate enough to be drawn into the ego-free zone of these sublime levels, it always feels like a new and first experience, and every time I am struck by how rich, multi-dimensional and incomprehensibly infinite reality really is. This applies to the astral regions as well, of course. But here the slightest shift of attention can draw me into radically different types of awareness. Setting aside the impact on the accompanying emotional states of bliss and all-present joy of being liberated and yet residing within the secure feeling of shelter where nothing can harm one, I am confronted with unlimited possibilities of perception, experience and exploration, which makes every moment a new discovery and realization. To give an example, when posing a question such as, where does the ego come from? I am not only presented with an answer, but with a clear graphic multimedia presentation. With the question posed, I was instantly thrown into a vast network of intricate patterns, each element connected to its neighbors. The further I rose away from it, the more I perceived it as one huge and intricate tapestry made out of billions of its individual components. But the moment I closed into one individual component, I found myself positioned at the epicenter of the universe from which all the pattern radiated out. The realization was that wherever I placed my attention became the epicenter of the universe, and that did not just apply to individual people, but to everything in existence, from any object to every atom and every living thing. At any one point everything radiates out into infinity, giving the impression that every point I focus on and then out from instantly becomes the very center of the universe. This is why every person on Earth considers themselves to be unique and the most important person, fashioning the ego identity from this perception and the history of experiences focused on it. When I walk through the busy streets of London on a Saturday afternoon, I am surrounded by thousands of centers of the universe, where everybody considers themselves absolutely unique and special, and for good reason.